She's over there shaking her head like, you son of a gun.
I know.
Hey, so you know, we, on our amendment to the board bill.
Yes.
So, as you heard last night, Ed had that little, mm-hmm. that little bill. I'm like, oh, that's fascinating. So I called him again today to verify. He's like, yeah, they get hired by the commissioner gets hired by the board, reports to the board. He's like, so there is absolutely precedent when they try to say, no, 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 separation mm-hmm. of powers, you can't do this. He's like, this is wrong. Scott is running this down. He's pretty sure that there's something like that on the fish board mm-hmm. as well. Some other kind of thing where there's like reporting to back and forth something, whatever, there's more to it. So it's not so clean as they go, nope, commissioners own everything and they run it all. No, they do not. So the legal opinion that came back said, oh, no, you know, you got to add to the commissioner or something on that. And I'm sitting there going, you know, I think my answer is going to be, we personally, if we could pass it, we pass this amendment, we rip the Band-Aid off, and we let it go forward and see what happens.
The one thing that might be different is who appoints the Board of Ed, because if it's appointed completely by the governor, that's one thing, but if you get governor and legislator appointments, as we have already passed other amendments to make this board do, that could be different on the separation of powers side of things.
Yeah, you didn't think so. So
okay.
I don't think that's an issue, but this goes back to the same thing. These are opinions, right? And we have precedent for other things happening. So this one, it's all clean? No, it's not. One. Two, if it's not really been adjudicated like this and we're leaning towards the path of giving the board more power and starting to move out from under transportation, then it's time we just press the test. And if we don't do this, then we're not pressing a test, and we're kind of where we started. We're really not getting the product that Machicki said he wanted. Oh, we're giving him teeth. No, we're not, because we can do all this all day long, and if he still reports to the commissioner, mm-hmm. then the commissioner can blow it all off.
Right.
We haven't changed a thing other than, oh, we're going to get reports now, and they're going to be strongly worded. So this is going to be, you know, I'm the police. Stop, or I'll say stop again more loudly. You know, I mean, are you really changing anything? And we're really not. So
right.
After all these conversations, Rob, this is just my opinion. I'm leaning towards we pass the amendment, we rip the Band-Aid off and see what happens. And push the test so we can start getting down that path. If we don't do that, I honestly don't think it's back to what, you know, Kevin McKay was saying last night. Nah, we're not going to change anything. It's going to be the same old. They're going to go, oh, we survived this next latest push to rip it out from under us, and we're going to keep right on doing what we're doing.
Right.
Throwing money at it. I'm not convinced. So, anyways.
Well,
I can hold it, by the way, and all that was meant to say he said that you were going to hold the bill again for a little bit, so if you wanted to hold it, we could get a little more fidelity from Fish and Game 2 if you want or whatever, but totally your call. I'm happy to table it till the next meeting if you want to do it and see if we get more, but we have made some. said.
All righty. We will call the Senate Transportation Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is 1:39 p.m. Thursday, April 15. Present today, we have Vice Chair Schauer, Senator Keel, and myself, Senator Myers. That gives us a quorum. We've got Senator Klayman, Representative Klayman in the room. Sorry. I don't have the authority to promote you myself. In the room presenting his bill, then we've got Nancy Hemingway from Senate Records. Alex Banaschek is our moderator. Michaela Anderson, my committee aide, of course. Quick reminder to please silence your cell phones. So on the agenda today, we have two pieces here. We're going to start off hearing amendments to House Bill 36, the Motor Vehicle Dealers Bill. And then we'll be revisiting two tabled amendments from SB 103. So, with that, I would like to invite Representative Klayman and his staff up. Go ahead and get started on HB 36. And we've got one amendment here, my name on it. And I'll go ahead and call this amendment number one. This is A.2. And so I will go ahead and move amendment one.
I will object for purposes of discussion.
Thank you. We forgot to give you the script on that, didn't we?
Okay.
This amendment is being brought forward at the request of the sponsor and at request of Division of Insurance. We've got Ms. Lori Winghire, the director of that division, here as well. So Representative Klayman, if you wouldn't mind speaking to the amendment.
So what the amendment does is it changes the language that's
excuse
in
me, if you could
oh,
state your name for the
that's
record.
Right. Representative Matt Klayman, House District 21, sponsor of House Bill 36. And thank you for hearing the bill today. The amendment that we forwarded to your office is an amendment that changes the language because after discussions with Lori Winghire with the Division of Insurance, she explained that the actual insurance we want for auto dealers needs to be use the language that we provided in that amendment, and that the language in the bill was actually not the kind of policies that they would be writing for auto dealers. And so the language conforms with what they'd be selling to auto dealers. And the other suggestion was that we actually didn't need to put in minimum levels of insurance, because when they went to the insurance brokers to buy the insurance, the insurance brokers would figure out what the right amount was for that particular dealer and the volume of sales they had within the market. So the key was to have insurance, but not mandate any specific level of insurance.
All righty. Ms. Winghire, was there anything that you wanted to add to the conversation?
For the record, Mr. Chair, I'm Lori Winghire. I'm the Director of the Division of Insurance for the State of Alaska. And now I met with the sponsor of the bill to talk about the insurance language so that the product he thought he was asking for, the intent, is what he would get.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions from anybody on the committee on the amendment?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Keel.
It's not a question so much as the conversation we had about this provision of the bill, an initial introduction. We talked about a cost, and I think what we're looking at is a significantly greater cost than we had been discussing. So, Ms. Winghire, can you speak? Or I don't know if you're able to what the price points of these sorts of policies end up being in the market today.
Through the chair, Senator Keel, we did do some research on this policy, and we provided some, and I don't know if they've been given to the committee or not. We did have some examples of premiums. If you can bear with me just a minute, I'll find my notes. Auto dealers, for an example, are rated on full-time employees. So for an employee in Anchorage, it's going to be about $600 per full-time employee. Fairbanks is a little bit less, $350, and the rest of the state is about $300. To that, you have loss cost multipliers to add, and other factors, such as if they'd had claims before, they would add that in. Now, those are annual rates, but those are also written at what the bill asked for, which was 100, 200, 100,000 per accident, 200,000 policy limit, with a separate limit for property damage. I could not find an insurer that would write less than a million. So those levels would almost double for that, or those rates would almost double. Then there's a factor that I discussed with Representative Klayman, that a lot of insurance companies have a minimum premium. So you could be even having one employee and maybe having a policy for $2,500.
If I may, is that that $2,500 or $600 per employee, whatever, is that per month, per year? What is that?
Mr. Chairman, that would be an annual policy, and that would be what they would do is they would say $2,500 is our minimum premium, and you have four employees. So we've got all four in there because 600 times four, we got it. If you had another employee, then they would start increasing the premium. They would use that premium up as much as they could based on what they underwrite, you know, volume. Sometimes it's sales, sometimes it's, you know, full-time employees, whatever the rating factor is for that particular policy. Excuse me. And this one, it's full-time employees.
Okay. Thank you. Senator Schauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So that doesn't sound like a lot in the greater scheme of things for business-wise, but since you've done the analysis and work on the industry, is there – what kind of impacts would you foresee? Because it's actually a good question. I hadn't thought about it. Would this potentially do to businesses as far as that entry level? Because part of this, we're talking about, you know, smaller dealers that may be able to get in, barriers to being able to join the marketplace and the free enterprise. So have you thought about, discussed, or have other data that would, you know, talk about how this might impact, you know, barriers to entry or that kind of free market part of somebody that wanted to get into the business?
Through the chair, Senator Schauer, no, I have not. I really don't have any insight into, I mean, they should be able to get the policy, but I think I could confidently say that if you were an established business, you're probably going to see a lesser premium or a lesser rate because they have confidence in you. They've seen your claim history. They know what kind of operation you're running, as opposed to someone who tomorrow decides to be an auto dealer.
Representative Klayman, any thoughts on that? You know, because, I mean, again, it doesn't sound like much, but when you're trying to start a business, that's the key. You know, if you're coming in without much capital and you got, now you got another $2,500 hit or other kinds of things, I guess the biggest question I'd like to know is what kind of capital outlays are we potentially putting on somebody that's, you know, a real small player that would want to get into the business, and do we achieve a level that makes it so hard that that hurdle's getting higher to jump over, so we're preventing people from opening a business?
If I may, real quick, we do have Mr. Martinson and Mr. Whaler from last hearing as well that are on here if we want to ask the question to them as well.
And they may want to add what I think in looking at the analysis, which was really saying what is the economic cost of entry? And I think you have to look at two parts. One is the bond cost and what's the cost of obtaining the bond. So currently the cost of obtaining a bond under the $50,000 bond level is 500 to 1,000 depending on your credit worthiness, and the estimate for it with the increased bond from 50,000 to 100,000 is going to be roughly 1,000 to 2,500 for that bond. And then the next part of that is going to be what is the insurance cost. I didn't go make calls to brokers to find out what would be the charge. My anticipation, because the bond is sold by the same brokers. Typically, they don't go to banks to get these dealer bonds. They actually go to an insurance broker. And so some of that minimum coverage may get changed by the fact they'd probably be buying both the bond and the insurance package from the same broker. So that minimum gets that question about they have to sell a certain amount of business before they want to do business with the person. I think I don't really know the answer, but I tend to think, and we've thought, that the cost of entry with the bond and with the insurance is probably going to be in the 2,500 to 4,000 range for somebody that's starting in the business, which strikes us as, in terms of the consumer, having confidence in consumers that are actually buying cars from folks, that seems fairly reasonable given the fact that the cars they're selling are typically going to be, if they're trying to make a decent business of it, they're going to be in anywhere from $15,000 to $30,000 for a used car.
Mr. Chairman, in case maybe one of them heard the question, if they had anything to add, I'd be interested. If not, that's fine.
Okay. Mr. Martinson or Mr. Whaler. Question is basically, if we open up the insurance requirements and remove the minimum insurance requirements and let that be set by the insurer instead of putting it in statute, if the prices would be so high as to make it too hard for somebody to get into the business. If you have any comments on that.
This is Martin Martinson, owner of Continental Auto Group in Anchorage, Alaska. I'd like to comment on that, and I'd like to sort of give you a hypothetical. If were on Craigslist, you saw a car for sale by somebody, a legitimate car dealer, and you go and you test drive the vehicle, and during the test drive, a wheel falls off and you have a catastrophic accident. If they don't have liability insurance, it's on you. And so every dealer that I know that has a legitimate dealership, they have liability insurance, and we have garage policies. And, I mean, that is just a natural thing that you do to cover yourself in the event of an accident. When we take a car in trade, we do the reconditioning here. If we screw up, we need that insurance. And so for anybody getting into the business, I just can't believe that you wouldn't get liability insurance. And matter of fact, it's state law. If you own a car, you have to, at a minimum, have liability insurance. So I just don't see that as being a barrier to entry into the car business. That's just something that you should do.
So if I'm – just to rephrase your answer, if I'm understanding you correctly, effectively what we're doing is putting into statute what is already happening.
I don't understand that question. Right now we have to have we carry liability insurance.
Okay. Thank you. I think you did answer my question. Thank you. Okay. Senator Keel.
Mr. Chairman, just briefly, no. I mean, I can point again to a dealer, very reputable, who has a different business model. And it's not a primarily, not exclusively a car dealer, but is a reputable car dealer, operates on a very small scale, operates a boutique business geared toward a higher quality product, and that's not part of the current business model. So this would be an increased cost, increased obligation, and so that's something I think we should continue to think about, I'm not going to object to the amendment today. I hope I can work with the Division of Insurance and the sponsor's office and see if there are any lower cost options that provide the minimal coverage. I don't know that there are, but this remains a concern as the bill moves forward.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Klayman.
Just on that, I think Mr. Martinson brings up a significant point. I've been having some discussions with Senator Keel, but I often have looked at this, what's the situation of an uninsured driver who is test driving a car, and where's the liability insurance for that uninsured driver to be out on the streets test driving the car, and that there should be protection for the person that gets hit by the uninsured driver. That car should be insured just as my car is insured. But Mr. Martinson brings up a different point. So the small dealer, the boutique dealer that Senator Keel is talking about, somebody gets in the car and drives that down here in Juneau, and the wheel falls off. And there's a problem with the car, and this is no longer an accident caused by the driver who happens to be insured. Now it's a problem with the car, and the person test driving is severely injured as a result of the problem with the car. The notion that dealer could have that car, might be able to operate without insurance in that circumstance, I think would be troubling to the average consumer. I think the average consumer would want to feel like you're test driving a car, and if there's a problem with the car that goes off the lot while you're test driving, the dealer's going to be able to stand behind that, and that's exactly the reason why we would want insurance in that situation.
Senator Keel, did you want to respond to that?
Mr. Chairman, uninsured motorists are a problem on our roads regardless. We all want to feel as though everyone is insured, and they ought to be. That's our law. So again, I'm happy to work further on this issue going forward, because I think there are some valid concerns here. But I also find us in a spot where we're looking at fully doubling, or maybe a little more than doubling, the government required costs to get into and remain in the business each year. And we need to think about that as the bill moves.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Michicki.
I apologize for being late. I'm very sorry for that. But there's a couple of key issues that I don't understand on this amendment, and maybe of the votes without me. But 50, 100, and 200 is basic insurance. It's what we have on every vehicle, as far as I'm concerned. I don't have anything lower than that, even my 82 Ford plow truck.
Mm-hmm.
So if we don't have a basic expectation, I'm very concerned with that. And okay, it says that if you don't have some level of the basic expectation and this insurance requirements and you remove death, I'm not understanding the reason. And I'm not speaking against the amendment. I'm just late, but if I'm going to vote on it, I need to understand it. So what am I missing on the difference between the very basic level of insurance and your amendment?
So the reason the amendment was suggested by the sponsor and by the Division of Insurance is because what we effectively did, as you pointed out, is currently in the bill, it's effectively taking the language that's aimed at an individual and putting it onto a business. And what we're doing is we're changing the language so that it's more appropriate for insurance for a business rather than an individual. So that the minimums that would be there would be set by the insurance company, not by statute.
Okay.
Yeah, Senator Michicki?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That helps me immensely. What about the removal of death from the 085 insurance requirements? So is there a reason that was removed? It used to say for injury including death to any one person. Is your assumption that someone insuring someone now would just include that level of protection that's insuring a business on an auto dealer's form, or did we drop a word we perhaps shouldn't have dropped?
I actually think Ms. Wing-Hires would be the best person to respond to that.
She thought she could leave.
A little musical chairs today.
Thank you. Again, for the record, my name is Lori Wing-Hire, and I'm the director of the Division of Insurance. Senator Michicki, through the chair, insurance policies now go with a single limit, $1 million limit, whereas personal auto, which this started as, is $50,000 per person, $100,000 per accident, $25,000 property damage. Now it's $1 million limit, and it would include bodily injury, including death, sir.
Okay. Follow-up question?
Yes, sir. Senator Michicki.
And what did we expect that cost increase? And I know you went over this. I'm very sorry. If I could have avoided the last meeting, I would have.
I think we all sympathize.
So what do you believe the cost increase is over the basic, what my 82 Ford plow truck has, which I understand the difference. I'm just pointing out the basics versus adequate coverage in this case.
Sir, I couldn't find the lower limits. I couldn't find an insurance company that would write less than $1 million. And they are going to get a minimum premium that I'm going to guess is going to be somewhere around $2,500 for they had one employee themselves or four employees. And of course, then if they have more, the premium's going to go up. But there is going to be a minimum premium somewhere for the insurance company and or the broker simply because they can't afford to write the risk for less than X. And so the rate might be $600 in Anchorage for one full-time employee, the base rate. They can't write a policy for that.
Mr. Chairman, I'm assuming that's $2,500 annually?
Yes, sir. Through the chair, yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep. All right. Any further questions? All right. Senator Schauer, it is your objection currently.
I remove my objection.
All right. Any further objection? Seeing none, Amendment 1 passes. All right. So, okay, is there any further discussion on the bill itself before we move forward? Senator Machicki.
Yeah, thank you. I actually visited with a few dealers in my neck of the woods, and I'll tell you, I don't think this is a burdensome bill. I think if my daughter was out purchasing and test driving a vehicle, I would want it to be a reputable dealer that we can find if something goes wrong, that is adequately insured if something goes wrong when she's test driving the vehicle. I always try to put myself, you'd be amazed at how many bills I review from a father's perspective, Mr. Chairman. But I was very worried about the cost of entry, and just even from the smaller dealers in my area, it seems like most of them are protected at this limit anyway, if not all of them. I think I don't think it's a burdensome bill, and I think it's fair for some clarification and public protection. So I'm okay with the bill moving forward. I just wanted to clarify that I have done some homework with some of the dealers in my area, and it's I expected more of a more resistance than I heard.
All righty. Further discussion. All right. Seeing none, Vice Chair Showers, what is the will of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, I move House Bill 36, Work Order 32-LS0271, 4/alpha, as amended, with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Seeing no objection, House Bill 36 moves from committee with recommended amendments and attached fiscal note. Legislative legal is directed to make any changes or deletions to the suggested language, including technical conforming or bill title changes, to accomplish the intent of any conceptual amendments to the bill. We will take a brief at ease to complete the paperwork. Back on a record here. All right, so we're now going to revisit a couple of tabled amendments from SB 103, the Alaska Marine Highway System Operations and Planning Board. We tabled amendments numbers 9 and numbers 11. We've got Andy Mills and Rob Carpenter from DOT on Teams to respond to any questions. We're going to go ahead and start with amendment number 11. That's A.4.
Mr. Chairman, do you need me to move it again, or is it back before us?
I believe the motion is to take it up from the table, if memory serves. So,
Mr. Chairman, I move we take up amendment number 11A.4.
Alrighty, and I'll object for purposes of discussion.
To taking it up?
You're correct. Okay, we have taken it up. So, and I believe it was my objection to begin with when we were discussing it. So I will remove my objection to taking it up. So we are back under discussion for the amendment. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to make a change to amendment number 11. I didn't bring it in writing, but we'll call it a conceptual amendment that would change August 1 to October 1, if I may speak to that.
All right. I'll object to the amendment for purposes of discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As we discussed in the last hearing on this bill, the department was going to think about that. I understand they have communicated with your office that October 1st would be a more workable date for them to do this, and that is certainly acceptable to me. So I'm perfectly amenable to the department's change.
Mr. Mills, would you mind commenting just to put it on the record?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, thank you for that. Andy Mills for the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, Special Assistant to the Commissioner. So through the chair to Senator Keel, correct that October 1 was identified. The reasoning behind that was to give 2 months from the start of a new fiscal year for preparation and resources to be supplied to the board so that you would give that time frame. And then, of course, you have 2.5 months until the governor's proposed budget is released. So we felt that was a meeting in the middle, so to speak, to make sure that all resources were available and yet adequate time was provided.
All righty. Thank you, Mr. Mills. Unless there are further questions on the amendment to the amendment, I will go ahead and remove my objection. So the conceptual amendment to Amendment 11 passes. Is there further debate on amendment number 11? Senator Machicki.
Yeah, I'm just curious for the department. I don't want to ask the department. Sorry, guys. I'll ask the maker of the amendment. Right now, the duties and powers obviously don't include budgeting. Talks about financial information. Do you believe that's an appropriate role of the board to actually provide proposed budgeting for the Alaska Marine Highway System? Or do you think that possibly gets in the way of their primary mission? Or maybe if I can understand your intent.
Sure. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think it's an excellent compliment to their primary mission. And I think that's because as everyone at this table is keenly aware, budgets are policy documents, and there is no better way to fully understand how something works or fails to than to look at how it spends the dollars. And so for the board to have the most detailed and thorough understanding of what the system does, how it does it, really requires the board to have a full understanding of the system's budget and spending. And so that recommendation to the governor, who of course retains all his constitutional powers to propose the final budget, that recommendation to the governor, I think, means that the board is firing on all thrusters.
All righty. Any further? Okay. I will go ahead and remove my objection to Amendment 11. Any further objection?
Mr. Chairman, I object, actually, just to further the discussion.
Okay. Senator Machicki?
Maybe I will ask the department how this is a kind of collaboration, right? Always. How do you see the budgeting of the Alaska Marine Highway System fitting in with the role? This is your bill. How do you see that fitting in with the role of this board?
Either Mr. Mills or Mr. Carpenter.
Yeah, Rob Carpenter, DOT Deputy Commissioner. Through the chair, Senator Machicki, it's a good question. It's, you know, the board responsibilities, I guess, are going to be determined by, the final bill language. As far as process, you know, the We're going to be working on a budget that the agency, Marine High, will be working on a budget. I fully expect the board to discuss the budget, whether it's even puts a recommendation forward or not. I think we're kind of, we don't really have a position on whether that should be a requirement of the board. I do expect discussion to occur, though. I would think they'd be remiss not having some kind of discussion on the financial side of the Marine Highway system. But as the chair mentioned, it all comes down in the end to the governor's budget proposal, and him and her making that decision what they propose. So as far as whether we see this as a need, I'm not sure we do, but it's something certainly that will be considered by the board, I would think, either way.
Thank you, Mr. Carpenter. Appreciate it. Yeah, Senator
Machicki.
I'm sorry.
Just to join the discussion, because I'm glad we're having it. It does seem like this kind of goes a little bit into what are we considering for the powers of the board, mm-hmm. The next amendment coming up, continuing that discussion again of we talked about giving it teeth. So it's a good joke. I used it in another committee. It works well. So, but giving power to the board to enable us to move forward, as we've had this discussion about, you know, should it even be in DOT or maybe a part of it? I know there's other offline discussions about how we might change the Alaska Marine Highway system where we can make it, you know, sustainable, you know, for the future and get into the 21st century, all that stuff. So if part of this amendment from the sponsor is may or may not fit in, you know, depending on which direction we go. So I think it's a little bit unclear to me, depending on what they might do. But, you know, if we're going to go down the path of the board having more power and more influence and more say with the commissioner and an appropriate level director, I apologize for my voice, I don't know what's wrong with it, maybe this is the right direction to start bringing those teeth, that power to the board to have that kind of influence. Because I go back to the same thing we had before where we had the different union representatives here who even agreed and said, maybe it's time we go that direction. So I can see that side of it and wonder about the responsibilities. Are we duplicating effort and doing the right things? But at the same time, I think if we don't make some of these changes, I am concerned that we go back to we're still doing things the same way, generally speaking, and we're not really guiding the change. So I'm leaning more towards this, Mr. Chairman, because I think this maybe gets us a little bit more in that direction. But I understand the concern about, you know, with the current setup at least, is this the right way? I mean, maybe that would be more appropriate as we make some other changes. I'm not sure. I just thank you for that. I'm kind of thinking out loud here, but I appreciate the discussion because it is I can see both sides here. So,
okay. Senator Machicki?
I always worry about setting up an expectation for a board that's not a corporate board, right? So we talk about the next step, and I think I would like to see an Alaska Railroad type model in the future. I was hoping this board might get us there, but it seems like we're putting a step forward on a board that can change dramatically depending on who the next governor is. If it's the same one, it may not. If it's a different one, it may change very differently. And this budget's going to hold some weight, completely disconnected from the political process. That's kind of my worry, is if it sets up an expectation that the budget is going to increase or decrease dramatically outside of the legislative discussions, and I realize it's just proposed and doesn't have to be accepted. I wish it was sort of more had words like suggested or recommended or words like that instead of proposed. That worries me a little bit just because of that expectation from a board that is not elected and may set up an expectation that's unsustainable. We hope that this board, we all have a vision of what this board will do. Senator Keel's vision may be different than Senator Schauer's vision, right? I mean, it's just, but the budget connection, that's where that expectation might really veer fairly dramatically. So don't know which way I'm going to go on it. I don't think it's a bad thing. I wish the language was somewhat softer with suggestion language and not proposal language.
Mr. Chairman, may I ask a question? Just to, for the whoever's the appropriate person to ask it or to answer it, when it's proposed, just to be crystal clear for the record, it's just a proposal, right? This is important for me to make a decision whether I can support it or not. The governor can obviously do whatever he wishes to do. This is just proposal. He goes, I don't like that. I'm going to do this. That's correct, right? Anybody?
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In answer to Senator Schauer's question, yes, it is. It is just the suggestion to the governor. There's, I should have brought it with me. There's language in the Department of Education and Early Development that gives their board, which is a very different board, constitutionally different, gives their board the power to set or approve, or I can't remember. It's a binding word, and that is honored maybe more in the breach than the observance. But I deliberately use the softer word here, proposed, to make clear that this, because this remains an advisory board, this is something they're sending up the hill, as it were. They're sending to the third floor. The governor and OMB then propose to the legislature, which disposes constitutionally. And my general experience is that departments are pretty good at managing those expectations of the people they work with.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Carpenter, I think you were trying to respond to that, if you were interested.
Mr. Chairman, I've lost my train of thought on what I was going to respond with, so I will abstain at the moment. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I think we can sympathize. Any other debate on this amendment?
No, Mr. Chairman, I'll remove my objection. I might be creating a mountain out of a molehill. So I will remove my objection.
All right. Seeing no further objection, Amendment 11 will pass. All right. We then have Amendment number 9 from Senator Schauer.
Mr. Chairman, I move Amendment 9, which is A.9.
A.9. All right.
I guess we should go back. Same thing. Am I actually moving this, or we're just
moving to take it up off the table?
I apologize. I make a motion, Mr. Chairman, to move this off the table.
Okay. Seeing no objection, Amendment 9 is before us again. Senator Schauer.
So I'll bring up to get everybody back up to speed. We had a debate about the board, and I'll just read this, if I may, Mr. Chairman, for a moment to rehash everybody's back on the same sheet of music. Powers, duties, and functions. The Commissioner of Transportation and Public Facilities, in conjunction with the Board, shall, without regard to political affiliation, solicit, interview, and recruit the head of the Division of Marine Transportation, who shall report to and function at the direction of the Board. That was the original amendment. We had some discussion. There were some different things that came out of various experts, and we decided we would have a little more consultation, talk to Ledge Legal, get some opinions, some other different things. I've got some stuff here from actually what Senator Keel just mentioned. It's germane to this, the Commissioner of Education and Early Development, and how they do it. So I thought I would go ahead and just highlight for the committee kind of where we sit on those right now and where I think we're at. So the feedback is there is multiple opinions, as we've gone through them from Ledge Legal and others, that talk about separation of powers, and the governor does this, and you know, should it be under the commissioner? However, there's also precedent where it is not so clean as that we just don't do that, because there's some issues with the Board of Fisheries and how they report and do some things. We're trying to get a final opinion. We don't have that back. If we hold this, we can talk again or just assume that. And like the Commissioner of Education, where it says the Board shall appoint the Commissioner of Education or Development subject to the approval of the Governor. The Commissioner serves at the pleasure of the Board and may not be appointed by the Board for a fixed term. So it is not so – the point being, I guess, Mr. Chairman, there is a precedent that it is not so clean that, you know, this is just the Board and does its thing and the Commissioner's got it all, right? We can go in a different direction, I think, if we so choose. And so at the end of the day, there's kind of a couple ways we can do this, if – the committee decides to move forward on this kind of an effort to give more power to the board to move us further in this direction as we've discussed it. And we could leave it as it is, where it's at the direction of the board. Some people may wish to challenge that, but like I've said before, perhaps it's time to rip the Band-Aid off and press the test and see if this is the direction we need to go. And there are other boards that operate in a similar function. So it's not just that you can't just say we just don't do it that way, even though there are some differences. But this is, you know, us saying this is the legislative intent. We want to go in this direction. The other one is at the end of that sentence, we had a kind of a, we could do a friendly amendment to it or a conceptual amendment to it, which is, and the commissioner. so that you have some of the power that he does, in fact, work for the board, but he also, you know, reports and works for the commissioner. So you have split duties, if you will, and that was one suggested solution so that we take a further step in that direction. And it's not just so that the director would, you know, can work just for the board of commissioners and go, yeah, whatever, I'm not going to follow it. It gives a little more power. It moves us a little more in that direction. So I open that up for debate to the committee to just say that we have done more research. We've gotten more opinions. We've talked to a number of folks. And there are obviously are a couple directions we could go. And one of them is a little more forceful. One of them is kind of a half step. That's kind of where we sit. That's just about where we are. And I'm welcome to take questions if anybody has any or other comments on this particular amendment. But I just remind the committee, I think we all kind of sort of agree we want to go down this path. The question is how far do we want to push?
Senator Keel?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I really appreciate this amendment from Senator Schauer. I'm going to sound a little bit like I did on his giant amendment the other day. I want this. This is the better move. I just in this case, I think there's still a constitutional problem, and I say that because I asked Ledge Legal to help me draft something just like this that worked this way, and ultimately they ended up convincing me that I couldn't do it. The boards of Fish and Game, Education, Early Development are under Article 3, Section 26, where the board heads the department and is confirmed by the legislature, and that is a constitutionally different thing. So I really tried to find a way I could be convince myself that this is okay, and I couldn't get there. May
I comment to that, please. Mr. Chair? That's sure. Why we asked about alternative methods, and I will tell you, Senator Keel, just for your, as we went through this, we asked the question directly, well, is there a way around that or a way that everybody would agree that this might still work and bridge the gap? The answer was why I said there's the half-step measure, which is if you say that paragraph and at the end say, and the commissioner, they seem to feel that that would get us there, that would prevent that challenge or that the issue that you bring up. So it's just a thing for us to consider that does kind of split the difference and perhaps allow both things to happen, if you will, but not not take us to that point where somebody might go, that is just unconstitutional. I got the same answers you did, looking for something that might bridge it, and that seemed to be a solution. I thought, that's pretty good. That might work. So I just throw that out there for the committee's consideration that we did ask that exact question, and that's the thought that perhaps that would get us to the point that you and I are potentially seeking. So just for what it's worth. And I would add, Mr. Chairman, if we don't press the test, it will change nothing. So often you have to do it and rip the Band-Aid off and have the challenge and see what comes out of it. So perhaps we're at that point because doing the same thing is not getting us there. So how do we move off the mark? I don't know. Just a thought.
All right. Thank you. Any other debate? Either Senator Machicki or Senator Keel. Senator Machicki.
I also appreciate the effort. And I think this is the place we need to go. But I think this board is the interim board that gets us to that next step. A little for the same reason I was worried about the budgeting. This would actually be the budgeting and in charge of operations of the Alaska Marine Highway System. I don't think that this board has the makeup or the sort of structural authority to be actually operating the Marine Highway System. I'd like to get there. Maybe there's a bill next year that overrides this one that is more of an Alaska Railroad kind of independent board, but this tries to drag a subject matter expert board that is designed to suggest fundamental changes to the way the system is operated, the types of vessels, routes, things like that, and convert it into a relatively new board that will be operating the system. And it's, although I will support this when we get to the independent corporation concept, which I think likely occurs, I don't think I'm there with this type of board. So I appreciate the suggestion. I see this as this bill as being sort of that halfway, and I agree that we've gotten nowhere. I think we need the expertise to identify where we need to go, hopefully in a relatively short time, and then the kind of final solution to come in that would actually operate the board and operate independently. So I'm worried about this particular. I'm not worried. I don't think it's the way to go at this time for this type of board.
Can I make a closing comment?
Senator Schauer.
Like everybody else here, I can count. So I think we're all ahead with this, Mr. Chair. It's not worth wasting time on a vote if there's not, and that's fine. I understand the different things. I will say that I kind of expected this from what people have gotten for answers. So I think what this highlights, though, as we have discussed, is, and I do disagree a little bit, not with that, but the premise that this board might get us there. The problem we have is having it under the commissioner, and having no power of this board is what got us here. And I understand it's a little bit of a difference, but I don't think this board is going to change a thing, because it's still up to the commissioner to execute it or not. He can go, I don't care, I'm not going to do it. And as long as that's where we are, nothing, I believe, is going to change, because our hope is that they will listen, and hope is not a plan. And so it's just a difference of how we get there. I totally understand that, and I appreciate the comments. I will say for the Department of Transportation and the rest of us, what this does is just, I think, just pushes us even further into its time that we get something else done, and we start looking at how we separate this and go to the next step, because I don't think we have 2, 3, 4, 5 years to wait and see if this impacts and changes the direction of the Titanic at all. I think it's time we need to do it now. So just understand that I think that's where this will push the effort, is we're going to have to go down that path that we're discussing. So, you know, for what it's worth, it's a great discussion, and I appreciate it. And I can, like I said, I can go either way. And with all that being said, on the record, Mr. Chairman, I'm done. I will withdraw amendment, and I forget which number it was. Was it 11?
Number 9.
I withdraw amendment number 9, alpha.9. Thank you for the discussion.
Okay. Senator Machicki?
Yeah, just if I may, I appreciate the effort, and I agree with you wholeheartedly. Actually, my issue is not on the constitutional discussion. Those things come up, and we deal with them, right? Mine is more on – so we changed this bill pretty significantly. We placed some elected legislative appointees on this. I mean, this is very different than what we've had in the past. And I do think it will get to where you want to go. We've been largely standing by. This board allows us to not stand by any longer and to demand a better result. So what I think this board will do is direct us to that independent expert board with teeth that does the budgeting, that operates the system, that relies less and less on the state over time. I think you're just a little before your time, but you're going to the right place.
Standard.
The worst. It's all good.
All righty. Well, we're done with the amendment process. Do we have any further comments on this bill for now?
No.
Not currently. All righty. So that concludes the amendment process for SB 103. We are going to be holding this bill in committee. We're going to be ordering a committee substitute, given all of the substantial changes that we've made with all the amendments, the conceptual amendments, the amendments to the amendments, to make sure that we have the full product available in front of us, and give the committee a chance to review that as a whole before we consider passing it out. So we'll be holding 103 a little further on. Any further comments before we close out for the day? Nope. All righty. Seeing none, and seeing no other business before the committee, we'll be concluding our meeting for today. Next meeting will be Tuesday, May 20th. We will be hearing HB 27, naming the Irene Weber Bridge. With that, we are adjourned at 2:28 p.m. Thank you.